I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia will be unveiling a quarter-mile-long rail park today. It's an intricately designed walkway on what was an elevated portion of an old Reading Railroad track, not unlike New York City's popular High Line. The new walkway stretches from Broad Street to 11th and Callow Hill in the Chinatown section of the city, the first part of what may become a three-mile-long park that will span the city, that is, if all goes according to plan. Radio Times producer John Ahrens was given an exclusive tour by Kevin Dow, executive director of Friends of the Rail Park. They met on Broad Street just north of City Hall at the park's entrance on a dreary, drizzly Monday morning as workers were getting it ready for today's opening. As you pass an old railroad car, a white gravel ramp appears on the right, which gently leads you into the wood and steel-adorned walkway hovering above the dark streets of old industrial Philadelphia. Let's listen while John and Kevin walk and talk on the new path and discuss the design of the park, the history on display, and plans for the future.
This is actually, so you know, you can consider this the beginning of the trail.
Okay.
This is where we have three access points. This is the first quarter mile of the three-mile-long trail. And here we have an access point where the trains traditionally have come out from underneath the ground,
right,
from where the Enquirer building is, and then they gradually went up the street to up where the elevated portion is and which we're doing now. It's nice. This is our ADA accessibility. So this ramp was designed back in the 1800s at the same pitch that we need for ADA. So it was a wonderful thing to have.
And so will this run underground? When is the idea that it'll run under Broad Street?
Yeah. So eventually, we'd love to be able to connect over underneath Broad Street and going towards the western side of the park.
And is that a stage of sorts?
Yeah, it's a stage seating area. What we want to show with this portion of the park is that it's pedestrian friendly. You know, ultimately, 3 miles, we love to have walking, jogging, and biking. This portion of it is really geared towards walking, lingering around, communing, people coming here and enjoying the sights and scenes and being able to rest. So at the very beginning, you have some very nice seating area, wood, and you can see it's double-tiered here, all designed to kind of bring people around to be able to relax. You got a little bit of a flat space here. Mm-hmm. You might be able to do something up there for events or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. So we got white gravel.
Yeah. You can see the plantings. We have birch, we have London planes, all perennials, all designed to be kind of hardy, urban-type trees. For us, as Friends of the Rail Park, that allows us to have minimize our costs, our upkeep costs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we learned from our friends up in New York was that their upkeep costs are very, very expensive. And so we've chosen materials, one that allow us to minimize that. It also pays homage and respects the past, the industrial past. So you can see the metalworking, the wood, the gravel. You can see how we've tried to incorporate aspects of the rail line into the continuum of the park.
Mm-hmm.
You have lighting at the kind of knee level here. Ambient lighting will come at nighttime. The park is open 24 hours, 7 days a week. So the ambient lighting from the buildings around us will provide that insufficient lighting for us, especially when we put these knee-high level lightings, turn that on, it'll be fine at night. Security in the evenings, certainly through the summer and into the fall. So we're very excited about it being a public park and open to everyone to enjoy.
And you said you did consult the people of New York,
High Line. Yeah, you know, the High Line was something that got done and everybody points to. They experienced it. And so it really helped us galvanize support for what we were doing here for Philadelphia's rail park. And what we know is that when they looked back, they looked at their success and thought about a couple of different things, how they would do it differently, and we're learning from that. Well, also, a big piece of that is, see if you can see that we're working in and walking towards the, we're in the Chinatown North community, the Calla Hill community. One of the things that we want to make sure we pay more attention to, close attention to, is our relationship with our communities. Mm-hmm. The rail park crosses 10 communities throughout its 3 miles. And what we want to make sure is that we engage that community. We involve them in the creation of future phases. We involve them in how we use the park going forward, whether that's community activities, health activities for some of our seniors, certainly for anything that the residents in the immediate neighborhood really want. It's right. Important for us.
It certainly is like an industrial view.
Yeah. If we took the whole tour, we walked all the way down from, where the on the other side of Broad Street, the western side of Broad Street, we'd walk you down a history of Philadelphia. And, Philadelphia in the 1800s was industrial America. That's where it was the manufacturer of the world. And the Reading Railroad Company was the supplier, the distributor for all of that. And so you look here on the completed part, you see aspects of that. You see the rail line. You see the old lights that we've incorporated, we kept in. You can see the buildings around here. You have old printing companies that are now converted into, office space, co-working space, the Wolf Building. You got buildings over here that are being built by, newer buildings built by Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation, residential. You have 401 North Broad Street. That's used to be a packaging company for the Reading Company. Now is a switching company. And so we can see how we've tried to incorporate that history into the park itself. And as we bring people here, young and old, we'll tell that story.
You will, yeah.
That rail line car was a dining car, from what I understand. It has served in years past as a hot dog stand, a grill, mm-hmm. kind of cafe type of thing. Mm-hmm. That's why we think it would be a nice thing to reconvert back to some sort of cafe of some nature.
It's funny because what we're walking through right now, if this weren't here, it would be a very difficult walk to navigate from Broad Street and Noble to where we're going now. I think I've done it myself, where you're just sort of walking through these electrical grids and
you got
old buildings and everything like that, and this is actually a pleasant walk that we're
this
doing.
Is a pleasant walk, and that's one of the things, is that if you think about it, the whole length, you could go from East Poplar, which is over here on our left where the trail goes around. Mm-hmm. That's the unfinished portion, but that goes all the way up to East Poplar. Imagine walking from all the way from East Poplar down here, Calla Hill, back over here to the museum area, mm-hmm. all on a safe walking path. That's wonderful. That's great. And then you don't have to traverse the urban streets of Philadelphia.
Right. Got some swings here and held up by industrial beams.
Yeah. We, that metal is reflective of metal beams, structural beams. It'll age nicely. I think it'll turn a nice gray. So, paying attention to how we have to maintain it over the long haul. The wood beams, the wooden benches are there. They'll turn a nice color as they begin to oxidize and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Those are nice, heavy benches. So it takes a little bit to swing on them, but very nice. Will last for a long, long time.
What did all this look like before the work started?
Oh, if you can, if you can look at a train stopped running in about 1985 or so, right? 1984. If you look across, maybe we can peek over here where the gate is. You can see the vegetation that has grown up all along.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what it looked like. And if you can see right over here at the end, we're at 12th and Calla Hill, right? Mm-hmm. And we're looking out at the end of phase one, which was the redeveloped part, into what we hope will be, the next future phases. And we can see the vegetation that that has grown up since 1984. That's all on steel and, that's all elevated, steel and girders and gravel, so not natural, not into the ground, but you can see the weeds that have come up.
Oh, wow.
You can see the trees. One of the things we're proud of are these polonial trees. You can't see them now, but you can see one right there. They blossom into a very nice purple flower. They were used as the seeds in there were used as packaging materials for the trains that were carrying packages into the buildings here.
Right? Like packing peanuts or something?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Packing peanuts. That's yeah. exactly right. And as it came from Asia across the United States, those seeds dropped all along the trails. And now came up colonial trees. Right. They're historical value in Japan, and we're very proud to have them here. They grow like crazy, so we're going to have to manage them a little bit. But they're a wonderful kind of natural connection to the past.
It's just out of curiosity, was it at all designed to not be accommodating to skateboarders?
No, I don't, you know.
I mean, the gravel and the it kind of zigzagged yeah. between those little raised beds with all those plants.
Yeah,
on
not necessarily skateboarders, but really bicycles. Ah. I think the idea was that that was to control pedestrian movement, right?
Right.
Because what we know is that we could not, what we want to have the opportunity to have biking, walking and jogging throughout the whole thing. Because this was the most narrowest piece, we could not get it done there. So we kind of had to kind of set it up so that we slow people down. Mm-hmm. You can see we have a boardwalk-like type of path on the left-hand side looking towards Broad Street. You know, that's about walking your bike over here. Because hopefully there'll be bike trails all the way from the East Poplar coming around. We'll slow down here. Go back and be able to bike over across on Broad Street down towards the museum district.
And so what am I looking at in terms of what you hope for the future? Is it this continuing?
You know, we're going to step back a little bit, think about what the next phase is on the western side of Broad. There are a number of projects that are occurring over there that we might want to take advantage of. Mm-hmm. So a phase could happen over there more sooner than what we will be able to accomplish here. You can see that there's a nice vegetation here. This is kind of like nice outdoor walking space. You know, the research shows us that there are really no parks in this community. So that's one of the things that we're proud of, is to be able to bring some green space. Imagine if we were able to kind of redo that in a way in which we can make that an active green space yeah. there. Be wonderful. It's as wide as a baseball field over there. And it stretches all the way up to East Poplar, which is about 5th and Fairmount from where we are right now.
Oh, wow. Your hopes for the future are going to be based on sort of how this portion gets used.
Yeah, well, we want to use this aspect, the first quarter miles of demonstration, kind of like say, hey, this is what's possible. Mm-hmm. This is what we can achieve to galvanize our hope, to build the support. It shows that how we would envision future phases. And then it allows us to have a place where we can bring people and say, hey, let's talk about what we think about the future. What does this look like? And pointing over to kind of the undeveloped portion of it. How would we want to develop that? You know, do we want a seating area like this? Do we want more open field mm-hmm. space? Once the community is gauged more deeply in the use, once the community is gauged in how we might fundraise around trying to find the support for future phases, we combine that with opportunities. You know, is something happening in a public works project that we might want to take advantage? And so that might mean, as we think about that and as we, you know, do our fundraising, we see success, we'll dictate what the exact next phase.
That was Radio Times producer John Ahrens talking with Kevin Dow, executive director of Friends of the Rail Park, which opens in less than an hour. This was a 6-year, $10 million project. We're going to post a slideshow of the park later today on our Facebook page so you can check it out. After this very short break, we're going to talk about this and other parks and open spaces in Philadelphia, including the 100-year-old Benjamin Franklin Parkway, the new Love Park, and more. So do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. William Penn's vision of Philadelphia, complete with a street grid and 5 public squares, was a, quote, green country town which will never be burnt and always be wholesome. We just heard about the latest addition to the city's park system, the first phase of the transformation of the Reading Railroad tracks into a walkway that opens later today. In fact, opens in about an hour. And that got us thinking about the Benjamin Franklin Parkway that's celebrating its 100th birthday, the newly designed Love Park, development at Penn's Landing along the Delaware River, of course, along the other river as well, other parks and open spaces. We have 2 guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Inga Safran is the architect architecture critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Her blog is called Changing Skyline. Back in 2014, she won the Pulitzer Prize for her criticism. Inga, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Marty.
Also with us is David Brownlee. He's an architectural historian and professor at the University of Pennsylvania, author of Building the City Beautiful, the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, and the Philadelphia Museum of Art. David Brownlee, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Inga, you're going to hop on your bicycle and head up to this new park as soon as our conversation is over. It's modest. It's a beginning. Is this a good thing?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Every journey begins with a small step. With the first step. So, and this is the first step. And I think, in preparation for this show, I went back to look at the articles I had written. The first article I ever wrote about the Reading Viaduct was in 2004. And
that's 14 years ago.
Yeah. And people had already been talking about it for a year or two. And at that time, people couldn't get their arms around the idea of why would you want to turn this industrial ruin into a park? And so just where we are today, I think, shows, how our thinking has changed about industrial spaces and about how we use the city, and so I think it's a great thing on many levels.
Well, I'm a big fan of architectural ruin, David Brownlee, and it seems certainly Philadelphia's history, its history of its industrial past, gives us so much to work with when you think about it.
It really does. I mean, and I always think of this city as a city whose resources are historical. We're not a city that's built on top of oil fields or coal fields, but we've got history. They're our natural resource. And we often neglect the fact that Philadelphia's history, for most of its history, was as a great industrial city.
Right.
And therefore, we have a lot of industrial resources, which in this post-industrial era can be repurposed for other things. And the rail park, well, is really really just the latest of a series of transformations of industrial resources into public goods.
Well, David, you and I were talking before going on the air about the High Line in New York, which, of course, is quite famous, and people go there. I've walked there, and it's lovely. But it's so, what's the word? There's no wildness there, shall I put it that way. And it seems, Inga, at least in Philadelphia, there's an attempt to kind of keep the wildness of wherever this walkway goes.
Yeah, well, the first section is definitely not wild. And I think people may be disappointed by that because what made the viaduct such an allure was sort of the sense of exploration and that...
This was going back to when it wasn't legal to go
when
up
it wasn't legal
yes,
to go there.
People would go up there and go exploring.
Yeah, there was a chain link fence and people would cut a hole in the fence and it was totally overgrown and it was like this magical place in the middle of this built city. You felt, you could practically touch Center City's skyscrapers, but yet you were in this wild, unexplored place. And I was just reading... there was a woman photographer who died recently at Cobbs Creek. She was part of these urban explorers, and she was trying to capture some aspect of the water pipes. And somebody said, there's this whole movement of urban explorers, and it's a way, it's kind of a reaction to our over-surveilled society that these are places to escape to.
Maybe break the law
break
a little
the law,
bit.
A little, yeah. Sure. And I think that is part of their attraction. And so I think this problem of, how to maintain this authentic feel of wildness and this organic feeling while making them safe and public spaces, that's a real challenge.
Sure. Do you see it that way, David?
No,
I think this is a challenge.
Well, I think one of the great challenges of any system of public spaces is to provide variety. so that not every public space is the same, that in different areas or with different raw materials. I'm thinking of the Wissahickon Valley, which in a lot of it feels wild in a natural wild way, which is very different from the open lawns of the Belmont Plateau or from the formal qualities of Rittenhouse Square. You know, that variety is an enormously important part of the project.
Does that make Philadelphia unique, you think, compared to other cities?
Well, Philadelphia is special, but not unique. many cities have a variety of resources. But going back to what we were talking about before, one of the vast resources that we have are the enormous amounts of industrial space and our industrial artifacts. Because we were such a mighty industrial city, probably the greatest industrial city in the world in the 1880s and 1890s. So we have lots of stuff, and there's a wildness and a sense of exploration in re-encountering those things. I'm thinking of the great electrical generating plants along the Delaware River that context, or the structures along the Schuylkill River, which we're gradually reconnecting to the city. There is that kind of opportunity here. The Hidden City Project, the Philadelphia Hidden City Project, is in a sense dedicated to the discovery, rediscovery, and exploration of these kinds of spaces.
Let me just read an email from Alyssa. Another project that is transforming transit infrastructure into a dynamic public space. University City District is putting the final touches on the Trolley Portal Gardens in West Philadelphia. What began as a bleak expanse of concrete has been reimagined into a vibrant public space and restaurant at 40th and Baltimore. I saw a thumbs up from you, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, still thinking in the sort of westward edge of the city, I think our largest triumph in recent years has been the development of the Schuylkill Banks Park, essentially a railroad right-of-way, the Baltimore and Ohio Railway right-of-way, reclaimed first illicitly by people who sneaked onto the right-of-way, and then reclaimed legally by getting the guarantee of public access, much over the objections of the railway, to what is now a linear connective tissue running right through the center of the city, or what I think will become, we will begin to think of it as the center of the city, that the Philadelphia will more equally be balanced on both banks of the Schuylkill as West Philadelphia booms, and it'll be something more like the Thames in London or the Chicago River in Chicago, where you have city on both sides.
And that's David Brownlee. He's an architectural historian. He's also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, author of a book called Building the City Beautiful, the Benjamin Franklin Parkway and the Philadelphia Museum of Art. We do want to talk about the Parkway celebrating its 100th birthday or anniversary. Inga Saffron with us as well. She's architecture critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Her blog is Changing Skyline. And we want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation, talking about Philadelphia's green spaces. And if you have a favorite green space that you enjoy, whether legally or illegally, you can join our conversation. Inga, does it take too long, though? You mentioned this goes back to 2004, so 14 years ago. Does it take too long to get things done in Philadelphia?
Well, it takes a long time to get things done anywhere in America, I would say. You know, there's never enough money. There's lots of legal complications. I believe that the Reading Railroad went into the tunnel that made this viaduct obsolete in 1984. So the progression of this is really, really long. But I do wish and I often think about why don't we have a more robust philanthropic culture? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where are the donors beyond the state? In the city, I mean, we do have some great foundations, but I'm thinking about individual donors
who could step up.
That could step up. I mean, if you look at the High Line or Millennium Park in Chicago, they had tremendous amounts of private donations, and I remember attending a few fundraisers for the Rail Park. And they would raise $40,000, $80,000. I mean, and it was hard work to do that.
Right.
And this is a $10 million, just first phase, $10 million.
Exactly.
I do want to talk about the parkway, but let me just ask you, Inga, one more question about the rail park. Is this a part of Philadelphia? And we heard Kevin Dow saying that, you know, if it's done the way they want it to be done, it could traverse something like 10 different neighborhoods. Is this a part of Philadelphia that needs some green space, whether it's a walkway or however else people might be using this rail park?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Callow Hill neighborhood, Chinatown, going into North Philly, there's not enough green space.
Right.
And, you know, it also becomes a kind of link between those neighborhoods. And, you know, the grand plan is to have the rail park continue underground or, you know, below grade in this old railroad cut. And that would, you know, take it west of Broad Street to Brewery Town.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that would be super cool. So maybe in our lifetime.
Maybe in our lifetime. Yeah, we'll see. Well, let's talk a little bit about Benjamin Franklin Parkway. David, you know, these things don't begin exactly 100 years ago, but nonetheless, we are marking the anniversary of the parkway. What was there at the turn of the 20th century, if we could roll back the clock?
Right. Well, if you rolled back the clock to the beginning of the 20th century, you would have found an industrial neighborhood. And in many respects, we can add the parkway to our discussion of transformation of industrial sites. The northwestern part of William Penn's plan for the city, the part at the quarter of the city centered on Logan Square, was the last of the quarters to be developed. And it was developed mostly after the American Civil War as an industrial area defined by and energized by the railways on all sides of it. There was what was up until its closure, the Reading Railroad line that swept across the top and popped up to ride on the viaduct to Reading Terminal. But it was underground through much of the area that we think of as the parkway.
Right.
The Baltimore and Ohio Railway was on the western bank of the western edge at Schuylkill. Pennsylvania Railroad came across the southern, and in between was an industrial zone, which by the early 20th century was frankly becoming obsolete. The biggest industry was the Baldwin Locomotive Works, biggest builder of railway equipment in the world, on the site of what is the old Enquirer Building on North Broad Street. And they began to move out of Center City in 1906.
Wow.
So it was going obsolete.
So we're talking smokestacks and
smokestacks, railway trains, little row houses in between, not much in the way of civic institutions, only one school, tiny handful of churches, mostly really a jumbled neighborhood with very little character. Mm. So the long and the short of it was not a neighborhood that people mourned when it was demolished to create the parkway.
And was it entirely demolished?
It was. 1,300 properties were taken by eminent domain and demolished. And then probably another 300 or so as the parkway project completed. This did not happen fast, however, to go to the other part of this discussion. And I think we Philadelphians have to, well, we can take some pride is that we do think of big ideas, and they do sometimes take a long time to get built. Because what we're celebrating this year is the 100th anniversary of the completion of the paving for the parkway.
Exactly.
But the demolition had begun 10 years before that, and the first public building did not open until 10 years later in 1927.
But it's, you know, I'm trying to imagine then the parkway without the parkway, without the art museum, without the Rodin Museum. Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine what that looked like without all these things that are so familiar to
us. Well, it was a dark brown smokestack skylined zone of the city. And it was for reformers of the early 20th century seen as a very old-fashioned place. The modern city would be clean and bright and organized, and industry would be segregated in outer districts, and the centers of cities would be commerce and culture. And that's what Philadelphia, along with a lot of other cities, but more comprehensively than most, began to make itself as in the first decades of the 20th century.
Well, it's so interesting what happens. Something gets designed, gets built, and then people use it, and then it becomes something else. You wrote an interesting piece not so long ago about sort of what is the parkway? I mean, what is this place that was designed to along the lines of the Champs-Élysées in Paris, but what has it become?
One of the things I tackled in that piece was that has become kind of our civic entertainment venue. And we have all these concerts. We have the NFL draft. We have races.
Protest marches.
Protest marches. You know, and it's great to have all those things. I find it problematic for a couple reasons. One, you know, it precludes the kind of everyday activity we'd like to have, like maybe more residential. It kind of makes life difficult for the institutions that are on the parkway that have to either close or take special measures. It makes it difficult for people who live north and south to cross during those events. And I would also say, having gone to many concerts, it's a terrible place to watch a concert.
You did write that, especially if you're way in the back.
I know. Right? It's like watching it on a Jumbotron. And
could do it from home.
I mean, I've heard some people defend that, you know, because it is a Philadelphia thing.
Sure.
And, of course, you know, the Eagles victory parade was a great event.
Indeed.
And, you know, I think it's great for parades. It's a good parade route.
But parades are linear.
Exactly.
But
so is the parkway.
Concerts want to be in a more square space, I think.
Well, isn't the mantra, you know, parkway, more park, less way?
Right. I mean, that was the title of the report that Harris Steinberg put together several years ago. And I think one of the things that Inga points out, too, is that there are tens of thousands of people for whom the parkway is a park because they live so close to it. And I think a good rule for design of cities is to make a city that's great for its residents, and then people who come to visit can enjoy that as well. And I think we owe the people who live close to the parkway more park, less way.
Do you think it's too tourist outsider-centric?
I think that the challenge is, in fact, to create a place that is much better for the people who live here while still managing to serve all those who come. And where those things collide, we can probably be more skillful in thinking of workarounds. One thing that I think is an intriguing possibility that Laurie Olin, the great landscape architect, has proposed is that Pennsylvania Avenue, that parallel road to the parkway, really needs to be upgraded to be a proper boulevard. And if it were a proper boulevard, it could take the ordinary traffic that the parkway has to shunt aside when it becomes a recreation venue or a special events venue.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's David Brownlee, an architectural historian professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Inga Safran with us as well. She's architecture critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. In fact, I won a Pulitzer Prize for her criticism. We are talking about Philadelphia's many parks, ideas about the use and perhaps even misuse of open space. 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Talking with Inga Safran, she's architecture critic for Philly.com. David Brownlee from the University of Pennsylvania, author of Building the City Beautiful, the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, and the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Let me read a couple of comments here. One from Nick. I wonder if your guests are familiar with Paris's Petit Ceinture Rail Park. It's a little beltway. It's an abandoned railway that encircles the city, an overgrown playground for urban explorers, not manicured like the High Line, still retaining its wildness, yet it's open to the public along its entire length and built on a shoestring. One more. My favorite greenless space is the triangle in front of Strickland's Merchants Exchange on Walnut Street. Why not grass it up and make it a flower market? It'd be beautiful. It's the loveliest piece of unadorned, underutilized space in Center City, Philadelphia. We want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, you nodded your head about the Paris's Petit Ceinture.
Yes. So it's a wonderful project. And again, it's very much in the spirit of reclaiming industrial space that is part of the history of city of the postmodern city, of the post-industrial city. Paris's Butte-Chaumont Park is a reclaimed quarry, which has a wonderful wildness about it as well, which is one way of saying, and that was done in the 19th century, which is a way of saying we've been doing this for a while.
Yes. Inga, just picking up on the parkway, there has been a project to cover some of the, 676 that runs through there. I know it's created some havoc in terms of just getting around and finding parking spaces and things like that, but
I haven't heard about the parking, but during the reconstruction of that portion of 676, we got a tiny piece of of that cut covered in front of the free library, which is a wonderful thing, and an extension of the sidewalk area on the north side of the Franklin Institute. And it's a small project, and it's, you know, you spoke before about how long it takes to get everything done, but I think it's pretty great, the way the land was reclaimed in front of the free library. I mean, it was amazing when they built 676. They didn't even put in sidewalks across from the free library.
You wrote that, and I had forgotten about that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
yes.
That was just so terrible.
And cyclone fence, and that was about it.
Yeah, and they reclaimed a big piece of sidewalk on the Logan Square part as well that I think has made it easier to walk around the circle there. And that was ground reconsidered, the landscape architects who did all that. And I think it's a great project.
Yeah, and it builds on, completed about half a dozen years ago, the narrowing of the outer traffic lanes, the installation of bike lanes, the rebuilding of all of the cracked and broken up pavements from the parkway from Logan Circle out about as far as Aiken's Oval, which was Lagerabi Skafti, where the project architects were. That, in other words,
they're now ground reconsidered.
That's right. Now their firm's name is now Ground Reconsidered. And I think we really need to pat ourselves on the back. A walk from Center City to the Art Museum is now a lot nicer than it was 10 years ago.
And I guess we have to think cars to some degree. Mm-hmm. We have to think walkers, pedestrians, and cyclists. I mean, cities have to figure out how to manage the various ways that the people use the city. Well, let's talk about Love Park. Has a long history. We've done a number of shows about Love Park and the skateboarders and all that kind of thing. Inga, what's your assessment of the newly designed or redesigned?
So, you know, they had to rebuild Love Park, which had become this kind of iconic space for skateboarders. And, you know, looking back at the old pictures, it was wonderful. And I walked through that park twice a day, every day for a good decade of my life, and never had a problem with any of that. I loved it. But there's like so many, you know, public spaces in cities, it had a parking garage underneath it. The parking garage, you know, was leaking. The only way to fix it was to redo the roof, which was the park. So they had to tear off the top. And there was a long community engagement process. And in this case, maybe a little too much, I would say, because, you know, they kind of got the consensus, the camel. And you know, and I'm only talking aesthetically here. I just find it very bland.
Not inviting?
No, it isn't. You know, it's very inviting from the point of view of just traversing it. It's very flat. And so it's really interesting because Dilworth was kind of the same thing. You know, in the 60s, we built these very dramatic, scenographic, multi-level parks. Then, you know, we had, you know, a spike in crime and homelessness, and we blamed the architecture for that. And so then we had this reaction. We said, we're just going to flatten it out. And so, and we also discovered, you know, when you make a flat surface, it can be multi-purpose, and you can have a concert or a movie or, you know, an event. So they're just like, you know, big flat stages. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, just from a architectural point of view, from an aesthetic point of view, they're much less interesting.
Wow, it's interesting.
You know, maybe this is my issue, and I did take pains to write in my review that I think it will be well used, irregardless of that, you know, because there is such a hunger for a place to sit in the shade and eat your lunch in the city.
Right.
And, you know, despite all its flaws, I think it will be well used. You know, I think the trees will grow in, the seating will improve. you know, and it's great that it's there.
Sure. Go ahead, David.
And the fountains. I mean, it looked particularly bleak before the fountains started working. But I do think it'll be easy to judge when we look back on this work from 20 years away that this was the work, this is how people thought during this time. Mm-hmm. Because as Inga said, Dilworth Park, formerly Dilworth Plaza, really was the same sort of transformation. An interesting, complicated granite landscape, which was very much in the spirit of the time
when
they were built.
With a big idea that it would be the Piazza Navona.
That's right, and beautifully lined up on axis with the Municipal Services Building. Very grandiose civic planning. And really a kind of landscape, landscape built of hard materials, which was much in the spirit of Lawrence Halpern, the great landscape architect. And you could tell, I mean, you could date those projects for their time. In a sense, it's sort of sad that we lost both of the projects of that time to replace them with two projects that very much speak of this time, so it all looks the same.
But do people now want grass? I mean, if they don't want hard spaces, they want grass and trees and...
They want a little grass. In both parks, there are these, like, postage stamp grass lawns.
If you want to sit on grass, you can...
You can do that. Give your little postage stamp.
I mean,
there.
I think the model for this and thinking about it was explicitly Bryant Park behind New York Public Library, which is a sort of... which is a big postage stamp of grass surrounded by seating and... in a sense, combines the things that we find in these Philadelphia parks now.
An email from Phyllis. One important societal trend I encourage project leaders to embrace is local food sovereignty, diverse organically grown or produce. This can be manifested as community gardens or professionally, I'm sort of running out of words here, similar to Bartram Gardens. But it seems Philadelphia has... There are lots of gardens, sort of tucked in neighborhoods across the city.
There are lots of community gardens.
And you're a community gardener.
I have a little plot in a community garden, I'm a big believer in them. And they have been wonderful for the city. And this is another thing that is in flux because a lot of them exist illegally. We talked about that before, because... We have this history of blight and decline and people reclaiming spaces. And they did this, you know, without getting all the paperwork. And so now that we're in this incredible development boom, the future of a lot of those community gardens is quite uncertain.
Wow. Yeah. Just because of just their history and how they came to be.
And America doesn't have the experience that Europe has of planning community gardens and making them part of development projects. Right. There's a long tradition of doing that going back to the very early 20th century in Germany and England that we just don't have.
Right.
And it would be wonderful to add that to the toolkit of city planning that we have.
Well, let's talk. We do have two rivers, two big rivers, the Schuylkill, the Delaware, certainly Penn's Landing, and that's been a long process, but things are happening in there by fits and starts, I guess. What's on the horizon?
I mean, there's actually been a lot of progress on the Delaware. Little pieces. It's not the grand vision that, you know, we were sold for decades. There's been quite a number of pier parks that have been funded by the William Penn Foundation, which are really terrific, and they serve different neighborhoods. I think Spruce Harbor Park has been a massive success, and that is a real park. Right now, the organization that oversees the Delaware is working on the Cherry Street Pier, which is one of the old beautiful old piers. That will have artists' workshops and a beer garden, of course.
You need beer gardens.
Yes. And the Fringe Festival moved into the old pumping station across the street from the Race Street Pier. Mm. So, you know, step by step, there are improvements. There have even been some residential buildings built. It's a much more difficult problem, I think, than the
because of I-95?
Because of I-95, yeah, because of the way the land is. Mm. With the Schuylkill, you know, the city comes way closer to the edge, so they're more manageable sites.
I think it is helpful, and I think the reason that we can begin to tick off these small successes that incrementally make the Delaware better is that there is a general consensus about what the Delaware should be, that it should be have lots of public access, that it should be more like the rest of the city brought to it. And that those those expectations are sort of are there in place. And I think it was that way that the idea of the rail park just seeded and kept plugging along, built piece by piece. Frankly, the Benjamin Franklin Parkway too wasn't built overnight. And I think that's the secret. You get a city's consensus, a shared imagination of what its future will be, and they build it piece by piece.
Let me read some more emails. An email from Guy. I truly love all the great public spaces that have been created and opened in the past decade. I just wish they all had less granite, hardscaping, and more green, more trees. An email from Mark. I completely agree. The parkway is not a good site for mega concerts. Why not use the Mann Center, which the city owns, a beautiful site with lots of parking, covered seats, a lawn with outdoor video screens. An email from Kathy. It seems that a lot of attention is paid to the siting and construction of new buildings during the permitting process, but no consideration is given to the eventual reuse or demolition. I'd like to see an escrow fund created for the city to use to remove abandoned buildings and parking lots to create open spaces. And we do have a lot of abandoned buildings in this city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots of potential, but complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A very interesting thing was the Sharswood neighborhood before it was basically condemned and slated for redevelopment by the Housing Authority. And that is what had happened there more or less by pioneering interlopers who made use of the vacant lots for community gardens. Some of the vacant lots were greened by the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society and fenced. And honestly, although very shabby, it really provided a model for what a neighborhood could be that made use of its open space that it was a product of blight and its surviving historic buildings as a whole.
We're almost out of time here, Inga, but you had a really, I thought, a very moving piece about a memorial park on the site of the collapse of the Salvation Army thrift store. This was, 5 years ago, the collapse?
Mm-hmm.
Six people were killed. Mm-hmm. 13 were injured, many of them seriously injured. This is a 22nd Market in Philadelphia. Describe what was put there. It's this memorial park and how you see people using it.
Yeah, so it was just dedicated on the fifth anniversary of that tragedy. And it occupies the exact site of the store. And some readers reminded me it wasn't the store that collapsed, it was the wall next door that collapsed onto the roof and killed the people inside. So it's, you know, it's this long, skinny park, kind of what I originally thought was a ridiculous configuration, you know, a really stretched out row house, 125 feet long by 25 feet. But I think the architects and artists, Scott Aker and Barbara Fox, did a really amazing job of shaping this space. And this is my complaint with Love Park, that the space was not shaped. But this park, I think it was shaped into separate rooms. There's the part with the memorial to honor those who died. But it also speaks to, I think, the whole city. Both in the symbolism of the memorial and the way the park opens up to the city. And, you know, it's a very busy transit corner. And there's benches where people can sit, and I saw them sitting there. And it makes this kind of seamless connection with the sidewalk. There's also a lot of pedestrian traffic. And so, you know, people who are walking, they want to spread out. And our sidewalks, you know, are often not wide enough. And I thought it was just really nice the way you could just take this little zigzag into the space, walk through the trees, walk out. You could look at the memorial or not.
As tragic as of course all this was.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, one of the things, you know, I think it is a kind of radical statement in the end as a design.
Well, we have to end our hour. You have to go, Inga Saffron, to go to this rail park opening. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Architecture critic for Philly.com, David Brownlee, thank you for joining us as well. He's an architectural historian, professor at the University of Pennsylvania, author of Building the City Beautiful, the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, and the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, check us out in all sorts of ways. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.